Okay, we're beginning with the Mishnah on the top of Ayin Zayin Umad Aleph. It says, Aish Shenodu Bo Mumim, the person, the man who develops Mumim, in Kofino To Lotzi. We don't force him to divorce. Amar Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Bamed Varim Mumim. When is that true? Mumim Tanim. We're talking about small issues, small blemishes, small things that may not bother an individual. Babumim Gdolim, Kofino To Lotzi. If these things are large, bigger items, then we do force him to divorce. So now here we are in contrast to the previous Mishnah where we talked about Mekach Taot, Mumim in the woman, which would actually prevent the marriage from going through, or that we consider Kedushei Taot. Over here we have it from the side of the man. And over here there is a higher threshold in terms of what Mumim would be acceptable or not acceptable. The Gemara will discuss exactly what the circumstances are surrounding this. It's interesting in terms of the difference between the man and the woman. Tosfot over here already clarifies something that he said way back on Bet Amud Bet. He says, Gabeish, leka de meimar distachafa sadeshel isha. De ish eno sadeshel ishto. Said this way back on Bet Amud Bet, that when something happens to the woman after the engagement, after the erusin, then we say it was the bad mazel of the individual, of the man, that this happened to the woman. On the other hand, if something happens to the man after the engagement, we don't say that that was the bad mazel of the woman. Because in terms of the definition, this is what Tosfot says here, he said it back on Bet Amud Bet, that the woman is considered to be Sadeh Shel Ha'ish, which means that Ishto Kigufo, but it does not necessarily work in the reverse, which is Gufo Ki Ishto, or that Bala Ki Gufa. And that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it, as Tosfot says earlier in the Masechta, in terms of the issues of mazel, which is that the man is nifkad on piria rivya, whereas the woman is not nifkada piria rivya. So the man has a more compelling reason in order to get married, and he needs the woman in order to perform the mitzvah, and therefore we talk about his bad mazel or something happened to the woman being because of him, versus the woman who does not have that obligation, and her getting married is more of an instinctive nature rather than the mitzvah necessarily of piria urivya. That's one thing he notes. The Tosfot reads, on the other hand, Tosfot reads on the top of the Amud Bet, four lines down there, he says, Danan and Sade, Denechela Bekodhu, that we see, and the Gemara mentioned this in numerous times, that the woman just wants to be married, Tav, the mate of Dum, the mate of Armila, that a woman wants to be married rather than to be single. But then he says, "The ish kapita mumim." A man is much more makpid on the mumim. Mishum sheni isha elu yofi. We saw that early in the Masechta, the different aspects of a woman. One of those aspects is that of yofi, of beauty. And since there's this focus on the beauty of the woman, then mumim take a bigger toll, quote unquote, on the woman's beauty. On the other hand, avalisha look peida mumim. A woman is less worried about the physical appearance, not that she's not worried about it at all, but she's more about the totality of the person, and therefore there may be a difference just in that view, which is the man has, in a sense, a more superficial type of view of the woman in looking at the physical beauty, whereas the woman is much more perceptive of the totality of the individual and therefore can see past those physical blemishes. But for those reasons, there is a difference in the nature of the mumim by the woman versus the nature of the mumim by the man. In addition, the Mishnah here says, kofin oto lehotzi. Kofin is a word that's used. What does it mean over here? So it says, near the ri, deyotzi v'ten ktuba, afal pi shemegarsha ba'al korcho. Even though we are forcing him to divorce her, generally when we force him to divorce her, you can't also compel him to give a ktuba. Nevertheless, over here, not only do we force him to divorce her, but we also force him to give the ktubah, because she's not at fault here. It's not her issue, it's really his issue, and since he's to blame, therefore he not only is forced to divorce her, but he's also compelled to give the ktubah. Rabbi Yehuda, Tanei, Noldu. So in terms of the girsa in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda says, like our Mishnah says, Haish shenoldu bo. Chia barav tani, hayu. His verb that was used, the girsa in his Mishnah, was Haish shehayu bo mumim. Manda mar noldu, the one who says that these are mumim that developed, kol shekein hayu. Certainly if they were already there before, the katsavra vikiblo, because she knew about them and she accepted them. So if he says that when they develop later in the marriage, that we don't compel him to divorce her, that certainly if they were there prior and she knew about them, then they would not compel a divorce. Manda mar hayu, one who says that only the older mumin, the ones that she was aware of, do we say we do not force a divorce. Aval noldu, lo. But if they were developed later, then we would not say that because that's something she couldn't have accepted. It's not something she knew about. It's not. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, b'med v'rim amurim, b'mumim ktanim, our Mishnah ends off with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel qualifying this and saying this is only true by mumim ktanim. But by mumim gidolim, kofino tolotzi. But then we compel him to divorce her. Bishlaman namanda mar no do. If you say that the girsa in the Mishnah is no do, these are mumim that developed. Hainu deshani bein gdolim niktanim. Then it makes sense to differentiate between that which is gadol, which is katan. Elamanda mar hayu. According to one who says that they pre-existed, then mali gdolim, mali ktanim. Why does it matter what the type of mum is, how big a mum it is? Hasavra v'kibla. She accepted it. She knew about it. And she entered into the marriage fully knowing that this was the issue. So why should it matter if it's a big or little thing? Kesvura hi, she yechola lekabel. She thought she could handle this thing. Vakshav ein yechola lekabel. And now she is incapable of living with this issue. So it was something that she thought she could manage. And in the end, she realizes she can't manage it. And therefore, there is a difference between Ktanim and Gdolim. But Ktanim, we say if she accepted it, that she has to live with it. We're not going to compel him to divorce her. Then with the bigger things, where she thought she might be able to handle it, there we give her the opportunity to get an out, because these are serious issues. Now the next is, Ve'elu hein mumim gdolim. What are classified as mumim gdolim? Now, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel just says there's a difference between big and small. What is defined as big and what is defined as small? So, Perish Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Kigon. Here are examples, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Nismet eino. If he loses one of his eyes, he's blinded in one of his eyes. Nikta ayado. He loses an arm. Nishbira raglo. Or he breaks his leg. Now, in their day, breaking your leg was a serious thing because you didn't get cured from a leg break. There wasn't any resetting of the leg, and then you're able to walk afterwards. If someone broke their leg, that was a permanent problem. We know that from the story in the Navi with Mephibosheth ben Shaul. Because when the Plishtim attack and Yonatan and Shaul are killed there, the Plishtim actually make a race for the palace, Shaul's palace. And Mephibosheth was a young kid at the time. One of the nursemaids grabbed him. They were running out with him. They tripped and they broke his legs. And for the rest of his life, he never walked again. That precipitates the story later on in Shmuel Bet with regards to during Merit of Shalom, what happens with Mephibosheth and his servant Ziba when they're greeting David HaMelech. He's always unable to walk from that day forward, and that's why he can't be the king, in a sense. He can't be an inheritor to the crown because he doesn't walk. So, Itmar, Rabbi Ava bar Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Halocha to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Halocha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that we do qualify this issue between small and bigger mumim. Rav Amar, Rav Nachman, Halocha ki divrei chachamim. On the other hand, we have from Rav on the name of Rav Nachman that Allah is like the Chachamim. Umi Amar Rabbi Yochanan Ochi. Did Rabbi Yochanan really say this, that over here the Allah is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? Amar Rabbi Barchanam Rabbi Yochanan Mechom Makom Shishana Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Mishnatenu Allah Kimoto. That anytime you find Rabbi Shimon Gamliel appear in the Mishnah, then Allah is like him, Chutz, Mi'arev, Vitzidan, Viraya Achrona. These are three instances where he appears in the Mishnah. One is the guarantee of a get. Vitzidan is the case of a person who's Hakziko Kordikos, and Raya Chona is the second Raya, second Mishnah that deals with this topic of bringing Rayot in Sanhedrin. So in all those three cases, the Halacha is not like him. But in all the other instances, the Halacha is like him, and that would include our Mishnah. So why do you have here a specific statement by Rabbi Yochanan that the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? He has a catch-all statement that says that he is, Halacha is always like him. Where it says, no problem, Amurai Ninu Valiba de Rabbi Yochanan. You're right, you have a machloket Amuraim as to whether this is a general statement, which is Rabbi Bar Chana says, Rabbi Yochanan made a general statement about the Halacha Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, whereas Rabbi Abba Bar Yaakov said that this was a particular statement here with regards to this Mishnah, that the Halacha was like Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. Ve'ele shekofino to lotzi. These are people that we compel to give a get. This is in terms of the man, mumim and the man, problems with the man, that we compel him to grant a divorce to his wife, including a ktubah, the right to a ktubah. Mukesh Shchin, someone who's afflicted with Shchin. We'll see that this is much broader than we would have thought, not just boils and blisters, but things that are problematic physically and take a toll, obviously, on the relationship or the ability to maintain the relationship. Ubal polipos, which the Gemara will discuss what that is. Vamikamates, again, the Gemara will discuss what that is. Vamitzaref nechoshet, someone who works with copper. The Gemara will discuss what exactly the issue is, whether it's smelting copper, working with copper, mining copper. Vabursi, Bursi is a tanner, someone who works with the orot, being abeid, the orot. Ben shayu ad shelo nisu, that's whether they were there before they got married. Ben sheminisu noldu, or whether they entered into this profession, this issue arose after they are married. So this is something that could predate the marriage, because of the issue that the woman can always make the claim that I thought I could have handled it, and in the end I couldn't handle it. Valkulan amar Rabbi Meir, afal pishit na'ima, even though they made this a condition of the marriage, she knew that this information was there. Yochala ishite amar, sevura ha'itish, ani yochala lekabel, I thought I could handle the situation. Vechshav, ani yochala lekabel, but at this point I can't manage it anymore, it's just too much for me. And again, these are professions or situations in which objectively, we could understand why someone couldn't live with this or couldn't deal with this, and that's why we answer her call for help in these situations. Chamim armim, mikabeliti al korcha. That, no, she has to stay in the marriage. If she accepted it, she has to stay in the marriage. Chutz mi mukeshchin, exception of mukeshchin mipnei shemamakto, because over there she causes a problem for him, which is that it ruins or it causes his skin to decompose. But when she comes into physical contact with him, that it's actually detrimental to the health and to his standing because of the shchin. So therefore, we force the divorce there. And we'll see later on in the Gemara, that's even if she wants to stay in the marriage, we won't let her stay in the marriage because of the danger to him. It presents with the ailment that he has. Maseh b'tzidon, b'bursi echad, there was an incident in Sidon with a tanner. Shemait, he passed away. Vayaloach bursi. And sure enough, his brother was in the same profession. It was a family profession. And his brother was doing the same thing. And now his wife was up for Yibum with the brother. Amru chachamim yucholahi shiteyamer. Vachicha iti yucholah lekabel. Vlecha ini yucholah lekabel. She can make the differentiation and said, I could handle it with your brother. I can't handle it with you. She can say that love overcomes all things, but that's with your brother, who I loved and I married him. But when it comes to the Yavam, she can say that I can't handle it, and she has a right to say that I won't marry him. Okay, my bol polipos. What is this bal polipos? Amar Rav Yehuda Mashmal Reach HaChotem. It's a foul odor that comes out of the nose. B'matnita tana Reach HaPeh. That is actually bad breath. Rav Asi Matni Ipcho. Vasi has the attribution be just the opposite. Umanach bas simana, and he gave a siman so he won't forget who is the author of which position. Shmuel lo pasuk pumei mikulei pirkin, that Shmuel never stopped reviewing this perek, or this perek was always on the tip of his tongue, and that's why he's the one who has the attribution of saying that it's malodorous breath or bad breath that caused the problem over here, and that's what a bal polipos is. And again, you can understand why that might be something that would interfere with their ability to live together. Vav mikamets, my mikamets. What is a mikamets? I'm Rabbi Yehuda, zeh mikabets tzuat kalabim. This is someone who collects dog feces. So why would you collect dog feces? It seems like Rashi over here makes a comment, and in other places in Shas makes a different statement. Over here he talks about being a pre-wash. They used to put the laundry into the tzoat kalavim, into the dog feces that was soaked in water as a pre-wash, and then they used to wash the clothing. So it was some sort of astringent stain remover or something that allowed for the cleaning of the clothes to go better afterwards. In other places in Shas, Rashi notes that it was also one of the ingredients in being ma'abed orot, in working the skins, being a tanner, one of the ingredients was dog feces that they used there. So obviously it has a certain amount of potency to it, and therefore it was utilized in these situations. But the person who collects the dog feces obviously starts to smell like the dog feces that he's collecting, and therefore he is unpleasant to be around because of the smell that he carries. Meitavei, mikameitz zebursi. Wait a minute. We have a breita that seems to indicate in the Tosefta that a mekametz is a tanner, a bursi, utameich, tikshilacha metnitin. Why are you bothering to bring in the Tosefta as a question? What about our Mishnah itself? Our Mishnah itself delineates two professions. One is hamikametz, then you have mitzareif nechoshet v'abursi. So it has both professions there. So then why is this just a question on Rabbi Yehuda? So it should be a question vis-a-vis our Mishnah, because our Mishnah separates the professions. V'bishlam ha-metzinitin lo kasha, our Mishnah and the Tosefta we can reconcile, kan v'bursi gadol, kan v'bursi katan. Depends on the size of the operation. Is it a large bursi or a small bursi? According to Rashi, the small bursi will have less skins working in it, and the smell will be less pungent or less problematic. The larger bursi will be much more difficult in terms of the smell and the pungency or the odor that comes from it. On the other hand, there are those that say just the opposite, which is that the bursi katan, there's more smell because he's a one-man operation. So he's always involved with the tanning, he's always involved with the liquid, and therefore he's going to smell worse. In the case of Bursi Gadol, he also has other employees that work with him, and therefore he's not constantly exposed to it, and he'll smell less malodorous because of that. Ela Rabbi Yehuda Kasho. For Rabbi Yehuda, it's a problem. Rabbi Yehuda and Amora makes a statement that a mekametz is a person who's collecting Tzoat Kalavim. What are we going to do with that versus the Tosefta that seems to indicate otherwise? When it says, Tanaehi, it's actually a machok tanaim, the Tanya, v'braita, mekametz, ze bursi, which obviously would be in parallel with what's said in the Tosefta. V'yeshomrim, ze mekametz, tzoat kalavim, someone who collects dog feces, and that will parallel Rabbi Yehuda's position, and he'll hold like the Yeshomrim here. He has a Tana that supports his position. V'amitzareif nechoshet, v'abursi, my mitzareif nechoshet. What does it mean that this is someone who works with copper, or someone that smelts copper? Ravashi amar chashle dode. It's a person who seemingly bangs out the copper or shapes the copper into large urns, that he works with the copper on a raw basis to bang it out and to make it into a clay, and that leaves them smelling terribly because of the copper. Rabba Barchan amar ze mechatech nechoshe mikaro. This is someone who is mining copper from its source in the ground. Tanya Kavata Diraba Barchana, we have a brayta that supports that understanding, is who? Mitzareif? Zeh mechatech nechoshet mikaro. That is someone who mines copper from its source. Amarav. So now we're going to move on to another topic, but it's parallel with our topic here, because these are other places where we force the person to get divorced and pay out a ktubah. So Amarav, Omer, eini zan veini mefarnes. He says, I'm not going to provide her with food, but I'm also not going to support her. So here, he's opting out of his obligations, or he's refusing to do his obligations. You'll see if he ten ktubah. It's not a tenable situation. So we'll compel him to divorce her and pay out the ktubah because he's at fault here. Also, Rabbi Elazar, I'm rather shmaita, the kamei de Shmuel. So Rabbi Elazar took this memra and told it over to Shmuel in the name of Rab. That Rab suggests over here, when the guy refuses to support his wife and to take care of his wife, give her sustenance, that we force a divorce, we compel him to divorce, and he has to pay the ktubah. So he goes and reports this to Shmuel. Amar achsua sare le Elazar. It says, bring out the barley for Elazar. Basically means bring out the animal food to give him. We're not going to be machzik lo tova. We're not going to give him, pat him on the back for this. It makes no sense what he's saying in the name of Rab. Aje kofino tolo tzi. And why are you forcing him to divorce her? Yikfu alazon. Why are you expending the effort? Why not just force him to sustain the woman and pay for her mizonot rather than forcing him to divorce her? If you're already in the mode of compelling, just compel him to do what he's obligated to do rather than compelling him to divorce the woman. So Rav, ein adam dar im nachash bikfifa or kfachat. Rav says, why did Rav have a different opinion? Why does he rather the divorce than over the zan? Because from the woman's perspective, she doesn't want to live with this guy anymore. He wasn't willing to sustain her and to give her basic needs. And now we're going to compel him to do it. So all of a sudden now she's going to feel good about staying together with this man. She doesn't want to live together with the snake in the basket, because just a matter of time before you get bitten by the snake. Kisalik Rabbi Zera. So when Rabbi Zera came, Ashkeche the Rabbi Binyamin Bar Yefet, Biyati Bikamar Lo Mishmei the Rabbi Yochanan. So when Rabbi Zera went up to Eretz Yisrael, he found Rabbi Binyamin Bar Yefet that was sitting and saying the same thing over in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. I mean, the same member that Rav said, he was saying over in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Amalei al-dach su'a se'arin le'elazar be'bavel. says over that statement, because he quoted in the name of Rab, but they fed Elazar barley in Bavel. I mean, that this isn't such a great idea because Shmuel thought that there was a problem with it. But here we have Rabbi Yochanan and Rav having the same memra, corroborating each other's memra, which is the fact that we do compel a divorce over here, and we do not compel him to sustain the woman because Ein Adam Darim Nachash Bikfifa. And so therefore we have this. Now, the word Achsua, as you know, the Rashi quotes it as being a word of Koseis. Koseis means eating a food not in its natural way, an unusual way. I mean, chomping on the raw barley seeds. That's not normally the way that you would eat the barley. But basically, again, this idea of either feeding him like an animal or giving him just some small stuff because they didn't feel what he was saying made sense. And we're not going to be makzik tova to him. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Merav, Asi, Ein Ma'asim Elo Lepsulot. So now here we have a huge qualification and limitation in terms of compelling individuals to get divorced. He says that we only use this force. We only apply pressure, physical pressure on the individual to divorce when he's married to a pasul. What is that? Ki amrita kamei de Shmuel amar. When they said it before Shmuel, he says, for example, almana lekohen gadol. That's like a widow to a kohen gadol. Grusha v'chalutza lekohen ejot. A divorcee. Or a chalutza to a regular kohen. Mamzeret v'nitina l'Yisrael. Again, all of these are asarim l'vo bakal. Bat Yisrael l'natinu mamzer. Or about Yisrael and a team of Mamzer. It's interesting here because you have a list of items. There are plenty of other psulot that you can't get married to. The interesting aspect of all these psulot is that these are people where the kedushin are tofsin. And other examples of psulot or arayot, the kedushim are not tofsin. Over there, they are tofes. And since they are tofes, this is a place where we're going to have to force the divorce. We have to compel the divorce over here. Aval, nasa isha, v'shayima isa shanim. He marries a woman, and he stays married for 10 years, velo yalda, and they do not have children. Ein kofinoto, we do not force him to divorce the woman. V'rav tachlifa barav yimei amar Shmuel, afilu nasa isha, v'shayima yud shanim. So now we have an alternative view. When they said this over name of Shmuel, we get a quote that he says is only true by the psulot. It's not true by the person who's been married for 10 years. Whereas we have another version of this from Rav Tachlifa barav yimei in the name of Shmuel, that even if they were married for 10 years, we do compel him to divorce. It's none. Our Mishnah. These are the individuals who are compelled to give a divorce. Mukeshchin, Bal Polipos. Now, Bishlam Oda Ravasi, according to Ravasi's explanation, in which Shmuel made the comment and gave a list, Derabonon Ktani, Doraita, Lo Ktani. Things that are mina Torah, the Mishnah does not have to delineate, because things that are mina Torah, it's obvious that you can compel him to divorce, because in violation of an Isser mina Torah. On the other hand, when it comes to Dinei Derabanan, that's what's enumerated in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah are listing, enumerating things, detailing items that the Rabbanan said are reasons or grounds for divorce, so we can compel him to divorce. Elo Rav Tachlifa bar Rav Yimei. According to Rav Tachlifa bar Yimei, litnei nasa isha v'shayim ha'yaser shanim. Why isn't that included in the list? So now what's obvious from this statement of the Gemara is that that's only a din derabanan. And since it's a din derabanan, it should have been included in the list. Now why is that a din derabanan? If he's married to the woman for 10 years, then he didn't have children, he is not doing the mitzvah of pru revu, which is a mitzvah deoraita. So why would you deem it a mitzvah derabanan or under the rubric of a rabbanan and not under a din deoraita? So Rashi explains over here, because the truth is that he doesn't have to divorce her. He can stay married to her and then marry another woman, take another wife, and he can have children with the other wife. He's not compelled to divorce her in order to accomplish the mitzvah pru revu. So then why would we force him to divorce then? Why do you need to at all? So Rashi says something, and we've spoken about this in the past, that he says that if he stays married to this woman, the likelihood that he'll take another woman is low. And that's both from the perspective, Rashi states it from his perspective, which is that he's comfortable, he's happy, he has a wife, and therefore he'll be less compelled to take another wife because he has a partner, and therefore he won't take the other wife. The Tosfot Reed, on the other hand, terms it from the other perspective, which is that other people will not give him a woman. If you're a father who has a daughter and he's already married, you're less likely to give your daughter over as a second wife than you are as a first wife. So if he's married, it's less likely that you're actually going to get someone to grant him a second wife. What you see from this, and this is what I said we mentioned before in the past, is that even though polygamy was allowed and it wasn't an issue at all, it was not so common. That here you see it, as Rashi is describing over here, and the Gemara is describing over here, that it actually is an inhibitor for him to get married or to take another wife, having the first wife. And therefore, we would compel him to divorce her in order to facilitate getting married. Even though technically he could have gotten married and taken a second wife. That's number one. In terms of also the other issue, which is, by mitzvah asay, we know that by mitzvah asay, kofino to'ad shemoyer rotzeani, that we force an individual until he does the mitzvah asay. If he doesn't put on tefillin, he doesn't take tulav, Beit Din is empowered to compel him to do the mitzvah asay. Now, there are exceptions to that. For instance, a mitzvah asay should matan schara b'tzida. If you have a mitzvah asay where the schara, the reward, is written in the Torah, that's enough of a compelling reason for him to do it that we don't force him by physical force. So why over here wouldn't you just force him because he's not doing a mitzvah asay? He's chayav and pru urvu. He's not doing that mitzvah asay. Why don't we compel him in this case? So there are those that answer because even if we force him to divorce the woman, first of all, will he get married or will he find another woman? Even if he finds another woman, there's no guarantee that that will result in him being mekayim the mitzvah pru urvu. So you're compelling him to do something where you're not even sure that's going to result in him accomplishing the mitzvah asay. So therefore, the kofinot over here is just to facilitate, but it's not the kofinot that we find by other mitzvot asay that we're compelling him to do it because it's a mitzvah asay. Could also argue that it's such a fundamental mitzvah asay that it is the same category as mitzvot asay that matan scharan b'tzidan. Lo tov v'ra'a l'shevet yitzara. God didn't create the world to be desolate. It's a basic human, both need and obligation, for them to reproduce and to ensure that there is a continuum here and that they will be, in a sense, will grant themselves that immortality by passing on or having children that will carry on their legacy. So if that's the case, maybe that's why we don't compel them in this case. So the kofino to is a question of do we interfere here in order to facilitate his ability to take a second wife, and that's the machloket over here. But according to our Mishnah, it should have been included in that list because it's a din derabonon. And why is it in the list according to Rav Tachlifa Bar Yavimei? Amar Rav Nachman, lokasho. That's not a problem. Habamile, habashute. The difference is how we compel over here. There's different ways to compel an individual to do something. One is verbal pressure and one is physical pressure. So shute are physical pressure. And mile is a verbal pressure, even maybe social pressure, where we compel him to do it, not by actually hitting him, but by either speaking to him or imposing or gathering social pressure that would compel him to do it. And the Tosafot Arit says that verbal pressure is nidui v'shamta, excommunication. That's the type of verbal pressure that we're talking about here. So that's the list here, is talking about a list of b'shute, things where we use physical force and demand that he divorces. Whereas the case of Piri Arivya that Rav Tachlifa Bar Yume was speaking about as a case of Piri Arivya is that we use verbal pressure in order to compel him to do this. Mati Fla Rabbi Avo. So Rabbi Avo that challenged that and says, Bid Devarim lo yivaser evet, that through words, a servant is not, we'll call it afflicted, doesn't take musar. He doesn't take a lesson from simply being told something. You have to actually hit. You actually have to give them set by an example of hitting that they know how serious the issue is. If you just talk to them, then it recurs over and over again because that's not enough of a lesson that they would know. So how could here you could say that words or verbal pressure would be sufficient? El Amar Rabbi Ava, Hava Abishute. No, we agree. Both of them are talking about physical pressure. Hotam ki amra havina b'hadei shavkinala. In the cases of our Mishnah, if she says, I want to stick it out, then we let her stay and we won't force it. Hacha, afagav damra havina b'hadei. Over here where the woman says, I want to stay and I'm okay, lo shavkinala. We don't allow her to do it. By the case of Peru or Vu, where they haven't had children for 10 years and she says, I'm okay, I want to stay in the marriage, we don't let that happen because fine, she might be okay by not having children, but the problem here is not her. The problem here is the fact that he's not going to get married now and he's not going to accomplish pru urvu. So in that case, we won't listen to her and we still compel the divorce. On the other hand, in the Mishnah, where we're talking about issues where we're doing it for her benefit, that she's living with this individual, supposedly she can't handle it. And in the end, she says, you know what, I'll live with it, I'll deal with it. Then we'll let her live with it because it's really her issue and it's not his issue. And therefore, we will back off in that case. she's under no demand to try more because she's not commanded in Puri Rivya. He, on the other hand, who is commanded in Puri Rivya, has to try again and again until he can figure out whether it is or is not him. Now, we're not talking about it, whose fault it is. It could be the woman's fault, could be his fault that they're not reproducing over here. But for her, that's not an issue in terms of having to try more. For him, it is an issue because he's commanded to the mitzvah of Puri Rivya. So it's not about blame here. It's just simply about who's compelled to do the mitzvah. All right, so now Gemara says, wait a minute. In our Mishnah, it says, very mukeshchin. Our Mishnah has an instance where either she says, I want to stay and I'm okay with it, we don't let her stay, and that's the case of Mukeshkin, because that's dangerous to him, and therefore we compel her to leave, even if she says, I'm willing to stay. So now you're telling me that our Mishnah is a case where she says, I'm okay with staying, and we let her stay. That's not true. The Mishnah has an example where that's not the case. And so then why don't you include Pru Urvu in there? Where it says, it's none. Chutz mi Mukeshkin, yishem ha-makto. So exception of Mukeshkin, because she causes problem with the abrasion against the skin. The Biktani, and it writes it. So if that's the case, it should also write the case of Pru Urvu, because that's the same situation when she says, I want to stay, we don't let her stay. Now, haltam ki amra dayarna behadei besadei shavkinan la. Over there, if she says, I'm willing to live with him with Edim, then we let her stay. In the case of Shchin, if she's willing to live with him, not be Yichud anymore, we'll have other parties live in the house, so there will no longer be a problem of Yichud, and our fear is their physical contact. The physical intimacy is dangerous for him. So in that case, if she's willing to live with him with Edim, meaning if there's no longer Yichud, they'll no longer have physical intimacy, then we let her go. Over here, if she says, look, I'm willing to live with him, with Edim, and we won't have any more physical intimacy, that still doesn't help the situation out. We want him to get married to another woman. Her presence in the house, even if they have no physical intimacy, is a problem for him getting married to another woman. And so because of that, we won't let her stay, and we'll force a divorce, even if she agrees to no more physical intimacy, which would put somewhat of pressure on him to get married to another woman, although it's just not sufficient, and we want her out so that he can actually take the woman. Now, if you believe that the issue is that his comfort and he is happy with this woman, and then therefore he won't take another wife, in this situation, taking away some of the physical intimacy might help to compel him. It might not do the full job. But if you think the issue is that someone else won't grant him a wife, her presence in the house is an inhibitor to him getting married again, and therefore we won't let her stay in the house, even with a deem that will prevent physical intimacy. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Sakli Zaken Echad Me Anshei Yerushalayim. It was this elderly gentleman in Yerushalayim that told me, Esrim Arba'a Mukei Shechinein. There are 24 varieties of Mukei Shechin who are afflicted with this Shechin. Ukulan Amru Chachamim Tashmish Kashelehen. And all of them, the Chachamim say that physical intimacy is detrimental to the health of the individual who has this. Ubalei Ratan Kashem Ikulan. And Balei Ratan are the worst of them, are the most difficult of them. It's not clear here whether the most difficult means it's the most difficult form of Shechin, because we'll see in a second what Balei Ratan is. It doesn't seem to make so much sense. Or is Balei Ratan, is that the worst in terms of Tashmish? That it's the worst for them to have Tashmish? Balei Ratan, if you look in Rashi, is someone or an individual that has a sheketz on his brain. He has some sort of bug, small creature, creepy crawly thing, sitting on his brain that causes him a problem. Mimai Havi. How do you get this? How does that person become a Balei Ratan? Yeah, so I'm saying, I don't know, it's hard to understand when the Gemara says Kasha Mikulan. Is that one of the 24 varieties of Mukha Shechin? But Shechin, right, is a skin disease, so what does that have to do with the fact that it has a Sheketz al Mokho? You're right, it could be that it precipitates or manifests itself in the skin disease. Or, what it means, Kasha Mikulan, means that Tashmish, physical intimacy, is the worst for Balei Ratan, but that's not necessarily a variety of Mukha Shechin. It's not clear from the Gemara here. So now Gemara says, Mimai Havi, what is the cause of getting this, or how does one get this disease? So Hatatanya, Hekiz Dam, Vishimesh. Person who lets blood, and then has physical intimacy, having lo banin vitikin. He has children who are weak. This goes back to what we said earlier. We had this daf right before Pesach, back on daf Samoch. We discussed this idea that when a person, whether they're eating certain things, their certain presence in the room, they're seeing certain things, or that their physical constitution is a certain way, Chazal believed that that had an impact on the child that was born. So all these different sensations that the individual has, whether again in the time of Tashmish or in the first trimester, they thought that it had a significant influence on the child that was born. So over here, an individual who is Mekiz Dam, someone who has bloodletting, feels weak after they've let the blood. So therefore, if they have relations afterwards, the child that is born are Chalashim, are weak children. Hekizu Shnehem. In a case where both of them let blood, both the man and the woman, Vishimshu, Avinlo, Banim, Bali Ratan. Then they end up with these Bali Ratan, these people that have this problem of the Sheretz Bimukho. Amra Papa, Lo Amran, Elo Lo Time Midei. That's only if they didn't eat anything. Avo Time Midei, Leitlan Ba. If you eat something, then it's not an issue because then you regain your strength. Now, again, this could be for two reasons. One reason, again, is this physical manifestation of bloodletting makes the person weak, and then eating makes them feel stronger or healthier again. It also could be from the perspective of letting blood was also associated with tuma, and that when a person lets blood, they actually have to wash netilat yadayim afterwards, because there's a sense of tuma that's associated with it. So if they have that tuma, and then they have relations, then maybe that impacts over here, whereas if they eat, and they wash, and they take care of the tuma aspect of it, maybe then it would be okay. My simane. What is evidence or what are the symptoms of a bali ratan? First of all, dafanene, his eyes tear. The daive nichire, his nose runs. The aitile rira mipue, he's drooling out of his mouth. Viramo digve ilave, and flies chase after him. Umaya sute. And what is the cure for this problem? Amar abaye, you have to bring Pila, pennyroyal. Veludna, wormwood. Girda de egoza, the bark of the egos tree, or the wood of the egos, or maybe of the walnut tree or vanut tree. Vegirda de ashpa, or the other girsa here is the ashkpa. Rashi says that it is the scrapings from the skins. Whereas if you say ashpacha, ashpacha is someone who works with leather, a leather worker, so it's little pieces of the leather. Vikalio malka, which is a chavatzelet, the lily. Oh, matchala, the dikla, sumka, the calyxes, the red calyxes of the palm tree. As Rashi describes over here, it is the thin shell that is over the unripened dates. There's a red covering to them. Vishaliklu ba'adei adodi, you cook it up into a brew. Umayale the beta de shisha, and then you take him into a marble house. The reason for a marble house was because marble was a clean seal, and therefore there was no exposure to the elements in that house. When you use stones and other things, there were gaps, and therefore wind or air got in there, and it was dangerous for the individual to be exposed to the elements. When you're a beta de shisha, the marble uses that example of a place where there's no exposure to the elements. So they basically take him into the surgery room where there'll be no exposure to the elements. Velo, Ika beta de shisha, if there's no available marble house that you can take him into. Marlo de beta de shav livnei baricha, bring him into a house that has seven layers of bricks and an aricha. Aricha is half a brick, so that they have walls that are super thick. Each brick is three tfachim, and aricha is half of that. So if you have a huge wall, very thick wall, so the wall does the same thing as the marble in the end, which is that it's so thick that it ends up sealing out the element. And then you pour 300 cups of this concoction on his head. Adrafya arita de muche, until it softens the skull. Vikare de muche, and then you cut open the skull. Umaita arbe tarfe de aso. And then you bring four myrtle leaves. Umadle kochad karo. Umotiv chad. So then you do is you lift up one leg of this sheretz and you place the leaf under it. Then you go to the next leg, place the leaf under it, so you have the four leaves to get under the four legs. The reason for that is that if you otherwise went to grab the sheretz, he would stick his claws and he'd grab onto the brain and then you wouldn't be able to get him out. So here, before you get him all excited, you put these under his so that when you go to take him out, he will grab the leaves instead of the brain of the individual. Shalko b'tzavto. Then you take it out with tongs. You grab it out. Vikolile. And then you gotta burn it. De'ilo. If you don't burn it, hadar ilave. It returns to him. Machiz Rabbi Yochanan. He's arul mizbuvei shel balei ratan. Be careful of the flies that follow around these balei ratan. So as Rashi notes over here, it's extremely contagious. And therefore you don't want to be exposed to the flies that carry from this Bali Ratan over to you. And so you should be careful. If you see a Bali Ratan, the flies stay far away. Rabbi Zera lo aviyotiv bezike. Rabbi Zera wouldn't sit in a place where the wind would blow in his direction, in the same direction as him and this individual who was contagious.
Airborne.
Right, airborne carrying. Rabbi Elazar lo ayo bolai. He wouldn't enter the same house as him. Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Yassi lo v'achle mi bay. Dahai meboa. They would not eat eggs from the neighborhood of a Bali Ratan. They were worried about the contagion. And therefore, they wouldn't eat food from that neighborhood. Even eggs that have a shell on them, they wouldn't eat. So certainly any other food they wouldn't eat from that neighborhood. Yibshua ben Levi michrich b'hu used to wrap himself up with them. Vasik b'Torah and learn Torah and teach them Torah. Amar, ayelet ahivim v'yelet chen. That the Torah is beloved and brings chen. Im chen male alom deha. If Torah brings a certain amount of grace to its learners, Agune lo migano, certainly it will protect them. So here, there are a number of questions and explanations that are given. Number one is, what is it meant over here that it's malachain and then he says it protects them? So some describe it and it makes sense, which is that the malachain is that if it gives chain to the individual, then certainly afterwards, he will also still have that chain. So there's a promise that the one who learns Torah will have that grace. So if he exposes himself to the Bali Ratan, then there's a risk that he'll get the disease. But if he gets the disease, he won't be of grace anymore. He won't be Malach Chain anymore. So the promise that those that learn Torah will be Malach Chain means that even after the fact, they'll be Malach Chain, and therefore he felt protected from the Bali Ratan. Or you could just suggest that if it's a Kal V'Chomer, like he's suggesting over here, if it provides grace, then it certainly protects them from something detrimental. Here it's something positive that it grants. Certainly it'll prevent something negative from happening. The real question is, how did Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi do this? Because, in some chimalanes, and how is it possible that he wrapped himself up together with these individuals and learned with them, even though this was an extremely contagious disease? So there are those that say that that's what he believed. They believed Torah would protect him, despite the fact he was teaching them Torah. And in teaching them Torah, he believed that it wasn't even miraculous. That's the nature of Torah, that it would protect them in this situation. Others suggest that he used to do this in terms of teaching them Torah, and it was a Tzorech HaRabim. And if you do something that's Tzorech HaRabim, then you afforded the protection of Shemayim, because you're doing something to the benefit of the public as a whole. It's not for yourself, but you're doing it being Marbitz Torah, altruistic reasons. In that case, you have a promise of being protected. And therefore, they say over here, he was teaching, and he was doing something with Tzorech HaRabim, and therefore he felt protected. It's interesting over here. He talks about this story about Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. We have other stories like this with Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. Also, with regards to the akrab, the scorpion that used to bite people and kill them. And Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa goes and puts its foot over there, and the scorpion comes to bite him, and the scorpion dies. And he says, it's not the scorpion that is meimitu mechayev, ela chait. And someone who's pure, who's kulo Torah, and has not sinned, is not fearful of these items because he has the protection of heaven. Now, obviously, we don't place ourselves at those risks and take those risks because we never know. Achet gore. I mean, sometimes you don't know that you've sinned. You don't know what
we're not
Rabbi Chanina. Right. We're not Rabbi Chanina Mendoza. We're not Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. But these individuals who are unique and special individuals had that Siyata Dishmaya, because they knew that they were so pure that they weren't afraid of these things or these diseases, and they were willing to deal with those individuals. Just reminds me, just because Rav Rosner passed away on Pesach at 101 years old, his son told the story about his father that towards the end of his life, they took him to the hospital because he had trouble breathing, and they took x-rays of his lungs. And they found that there was mastitis disease that was inside of his lungs. And so they came to the son and asked him, was your father ever ill? Did he ever have something with his lungs that happened? He had nothing in his lifetime. And then he remembered that he was a young kid in the yeshiva of Chachmei Lublin. His father, he was a huge masmid. He used to learn there all night. But in the yeshiva of Chachmei Lublin, they only used to turn the heat on starting at 4 o'clock in the morning. But his father already started learning at 2 o'clock in the morning. So at 2 o'clock, he used to get up. It was freezing cold and he used to learn. He caught pneumonia at the time. Then they went to the doctors at the time, and they said the prognosis was terrible, and that was not likely that he would recover from the pneumonia. Sure enough, he did recover from the pneumonia. It turns out, and this is what the doctor saw on the x-ray, that pneumonia was in his lungs for the next 80 years, And then he never heard him. His son says that many times when he used to travel and take little tiyul, his father would complain of shortness of breath. But it was because of this, that he had this disease in him. So the doctor said he's never seen anything like this in his life, that someone could have this pneumonia on their lungs for 80 years, be healthy, learn nonstop, and be around for so long. But it says this, that's the power of Torah. The Torah protects the individual, and that his healing with the Torah and his mother in Torah protected him all these years from that disease. But exactly like this story, Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, that said over here. Okay, Gavah Shachif, when it came time for Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi to pass away, Amru Leh Lamalach HaMoved Zil Avid Leh Ru'uta. Go do something nice for him. Do what he wishes. Azalit Chazileh, so Lamalach HaMoved appears to Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi. So he says to Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, what's your request? He says, show me my place in Gan Eden. So sure, no problem. I don't mind doing that for you. Give me your knife, because you might scare me on the way. He's afraid that the Malach HaMoved might pull a fast one on him on the way. So he says, give me your knife, so that I'm not in danger on the way. So he handed over to him. When they reached Gan Eden Olam Haba, Dalye, he lifted him up, Kamachavele, to see his place. So the Malach HaMoved lifts up Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, I don't know, puts him on his shoulders, whatever he did, to lift up Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi so he can peer into where his place was in Gan Eden. Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi took the opportunity, Shavar, he jumped, Nafal Ha'ugisa, and he jumped in. He wanted to go straight into Gan Eden, so he jumps to go in right away. Nakte Bekarna Deglime, the Malach HaMoved grabbed onto the edge of his cloak. So he's holding him. Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi's already over there. He's like grabbing him by the edge of his cloak. Amalei. Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi says back to the Malach HaMoved, Bishvata lo do'atin. I'm not coming back. So he takes a shvua that I'm not coming back. Amar kucha brichu. So Hashem says to the Malach HaMoved, I itshal ha-shvata ni'ader. If in his lifetime he ever got a petach to a shvua, he was matir and neder, matir shvua, then he has to go back. Because we'll be matir the shvua here. Ilo, lo nihader. If we find that he never was matir neder or shvua during his lifetime, then he always stands by his shvua. Then he'll have to keep the shvua here as well, and we'll let him stay. And sure enough, they found that he was never matir a shvua. He kept anything that he said. He kept his word. And therefore, they had to leave him there. He went into Gan Eden. Amalei, havli sakinai. Now the Malach HaMoved says, give me my trade tool back again. You can't tuck off with the knife. Lo avaka yoivle. He refused to give it back to him. He says, I may as well save other people while I'm at it to get rid of the Malach HaMoved. Nachvik bat kala, v'amrle havni alei. So then a bat call, a heavenly voice comes out and says, give it back to him. Demitva lebreata. We need it for others. The world needs it. The way of the world is that people need to pass away, and the Malach HaMoved is just doing his job. And please don't prevent him from doing his job. It's nice what you're thinking about doing. It's a beautiful idea. But it still is not the way that the world works, and therefore please give him back his knife. Machris Eliyahu Kamei, so when Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi is entering into Gan Eden Olam Haba, he announces, Eliyahu announces, Pnu Makom the Bar Levi, Pnu Makom the Bar Levi, clear out the space for Bar Levi, Bar Levi, Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, he's coming, clear out the space. Azal Ashkei the Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi bumps into Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Tev Yavid Vatlat Asar Tachtaki Pisa. He was sitting on 13 gold chairs. Amalei, Atu Bar Levi. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai takes a look up and says, you're this Bar Levi that they talk about? Amalei, hey, and he says, yes. Nirata Keshet B'Yamecha. Was there ever a rainbow in your day? Amalei, hey, he says, yes. Imkein Iata Bar Levi. Then you're certainly not Bar Levi that they're announcing here. Velohi, and it's not true. Doloha Bai Mide. There was never a rainbow during Rabbi Shimon Bar Levi's time. But he didn't want to pat himself on the back. He didn't want to be boastful. So what's interesting here is this idea that the keshet, that when we see a rainbow, that's the upholding of the covenant between God and man, that God will no longer destroy the world. So therefore, the siman that comes out, the keshet comes out, means that God is showing the covenant because God might want to destroy the world, and therefore he has to show the keshet in order to indicate that he won't do it. But when there's a tzaddik in the door, who can carry that burden and can protect the generation, there's no need to show the rainbow because the tzaddik in that door can protect all the individuals in that door. So what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was asking Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, if this is the real Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, then certainly there was no rainbow in his time. So when he answers him in the affirmative that there was a rainbow, he says, you're clearly not Bar Levi. And then the Gemara answers that it's not true. He really did never saw a rainbow in his time, but he was covering up. He didn't want to take credit for it. So what does that mean? I mean, what, he lied about it? By the way, the Gemara does note this is one of the things that you can lie about is taking credit and get a person about learning how much you've learned. You never have to tell the truth about how much you've learned. Those are one of the things you can lie about. But up in heaven, I don't know if there's a need to lie necessarily. So some suggest that he never saw a rainbow in his time, but he didn't want to take credit for it. He says, who knows if it was for me? Might have been because of someone else. And since he didn't want to take credit, he just said that there was a rainbow. Others suggest he never saw a rainbow in his time because it never rained during the day in his lifetime. The rain only came at night. Because when it rains during the day, the rainbow is a result of the refraction of the light on the rain. So by definition, when it rains during the day, you're going to see a rainbow. So why is that any indication of the fact that he was a tzaddik? So the Shlo says over that is because that when there are real tzaddikim in the door, the rain comes at night and not during the day. And therefore, the lack of the appearance of the rainbow is because of the timing of the rain, not because there's some sort of physical phenomenon that doesn't take place, that the rainbow doesn't appear. That'll happen anytime it rains during the day, but since it rained at night, it didn't happen. And therefore, they never saw a rainbow because it never rained during the day. So he didn't want to take credit for that because it was the fact that it didn't rain during the day. All right, Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa Shushbine Hava. Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa was a good friend of the Malach HaMoved. They were best friends. He was his best man. Kavanecha Nafshe, when he was going to pass away, Amrulei LaMalach HaMoved Zilavei Lei Rehutei. Go do his wish. Go please him. See what he wants. Also the Gabei Bitchazilei. So he appears to Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa Amrulei. Shavki Tlatin Yom and the Nahadur Talmudai. Says, give me 30 days to review my Gemara. Damrei Ashrei Mishibalikan v'Talmudo b'Yodo. Because of the expression, lucky is the one who comes here with his learning in hand. So I want to be sure that I'm ready when I get up there so that I can pass the test. Shavke, you let him be. The Batar Tlatin Yomin, Azalit Chazile. After 30 days, he reappears with him. Amalei Achli Li Duchtai. Show me my place, the similar request that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi had. Amalei Lechayei, no problem, I'll take you up there. Amalei Avali Sakineich. Dilmevatli Beorcha. Says, give me your knife so you don't scare me, you don't pull a fast one on me on the way. Amalei Kechavreich. Bait Lemevatli. You want to play that same game that your buddy did over there? You're going to take my knife, I'm not going to get it back. Last time I had to beg to get my knife back. I don't want to be in that position again. Amalei Aiti Sefer Torah. Bechazi Miyika Midi Dichbe Delokayim Te. So then, Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa says, well, why shouldn't I be privileged like Rabbi Shua ben Levi? Bring a Sefer Torah and show me, is there anything in this Torah that I didn't keep? Is there any halacha that I didn't keep? I did everything. Why shouldn't I be as lucky as Rabbi Shua ben Levi? Amalei, mi kracht bebalei ratan, v'yesakt betorah. You're putting yourself on the level of Rabbi Shua ben Levi? Did you wrap yourself up with these contagious, diseased individuals and learn Torah with them? So you're not on the same level. Which means that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi seemingly went alive into Gan Eden. He never died. In the sense that he went straight in, he jumped into Gan Eden when the Malach HaMoved took him up there. So Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa was basically asking for this same privilege. And the Malach HaMoved says, what, you want to play games with me like your friend did? So then he says, well, show me what I didn't do. Why am I not deserving of that same privilege? So the Malach HaMoved answers him, because you didn't do what your friend did, was you didn't wrap yourself up with these contagious individuals to teach them Torah. He's in a different ballpark. He's in a different level. Afilu achi, despite that fact, kinach nafshei, when he passed away, ifsik le'amudu denura ben didei la'alma, there was a pillar of fire that stood between him and everyone else. Vigmiri, and we have a misora. Delo mefsik amudu denura lachad bedara latrain bedara. But this phenomenon only happens for one or two people in a generation. I mean, that's how unique Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa was, that this amudu denura came. Karev legabei Rabbi Alexandri. So Rabbi Alexandri tried to approach him, meaning get through the pillar of fire. Amar aseh b'shvil kvod chachamim. Do it for the honor of the chachamim, that we should be able to approach you. Lo ashkach. It didn't pay attention, didn't pay heed. Aseh b'shvil kvod avicha. Do it for the honor of your father. Lo ashkach. Didn't pay attention. Aseh b'shvil kvod atzmecha. Do it for your own honor. Istalik. Then it left. What was his own honor? As Rashi says over here, that we can give you a hespade, and that we can deal with the mate and bury the mate. If the fire doesn't go away, we're not going to be able to be metapo in the mate. So b'shvil kvodcha, let the fire go. And so that's what happened, it left. Amar Abaye, Abaye now explains, why is there this pillar of fire? What is the pillar of fire, Siman? It comes to exclude or separate between those that did and those that didn't. So, if you have it with the girsa that we have now, without the parentheses, it means that it's to separate between people like Rabbi Chanina ben Papa, who were unusual, where they did no chataim and they were completely pure, and other individuals who are human beings and make mistakes and have some chataim. So to separate between them or those quote-unquote perfect individuals and other people who are just human beings. On the other hand, if you have the girsa here, then the fire there is to separate between him and people who didn't keep the Torah at all. So that's the question here, what is this fire separating between? So Rav Adar Bar Matna took the opportunity to give some musar to Abaye to say that it comes to set between him and you. Because you don't have a fence around your roof. So here you are talking about this pillar of fire coming to separate between the big chacham and all the rest of the people who aren't so good. He says, you know what's separating? Separating between him and you. Because you don't even do a basic mitzvah in a Torah of makeh to put a fence around your roof. It's dangerous. So he says, Velohi, that's not true. Mihava hava, he had a fence up there. Vaishatahu, the shajazika. A strong wind had just come and blown it down. And so Abaye didn't have time to replace it yet. But he had a fence up there. Of course he was in violation of the din d'oraita. But Rav Adar Bar Matna saw his roof without a fence on it and he was worried about it. Remember, their roofs are flat. Like some of the Arab homes today, which it was another floor. They utilized it. They used to dry fruits. They used to do things on the roof. So if you didn't have a fence around the roof, it was extremely dangerous. In the modern day, it's the equivalent of having a pool without a fence around it. That's the equivalent of not having a makeh, where there's an isu d'oraita that is violated if you don't have a fence around your pool. Amar Rabbi Chanina, Mibnei Ma'ain, Balei Ratan, Bibavel. How come there are nobody with this disease in Bavel? Mibnei Shochlim Tradin, because they eat, whether it's beets or spinach, Vishutin Shechar Shelhizmi, and they drink beer of the, Hizmi usually is a thorn bush, a shrub called the Spina Regia, but Rashi says it's Kashut. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mibnei Ma'ain Mitzoraim Bavel. Why are there nobody with Tzara'at in Bavel? Because they eat the beets or the spinach, Vishotim Shechar, and they drink beer, and they bathe themselves in the waters of the Euphrates, which are deemed to be curative in some way, and therefore they're not subject to the Tzara'at. Okay, with that we end the parak. Hadron Alach Amadir Et Ishto.